accession number 21124, reel 1.
Right, the next member of number 30 squadron I am interviewing is Flight Lieutenant Inga Davis, who is co-pilot?
Captain.
Captain, beg your pardon. Great, hang on a minute. Right, if we could start at the beginning, when and where were you born, Inga?
I was born in Cleethorpes in Lincolnshire in January 1970.
Mm-hmm. And what made you join the RAF?
I was at university reading music. I'd done my PPL and somebody said to me, oh, if you want to join the University Air Squadron, it'll help you keep your PPL up to date.
Oh.
So I joined the University Air Squadron to keep flying, finished my music degree at university. I'd spent 3 years basically partying on the University Air Squadron and thought, well, seems like a good thing to do until I decide what I really want to do with my life. And that was 10 years ago.
So you actually paid good personal money to get your PPL to begin with?
I did, yes.
That's quite expensive, isn't it, these days?
I got a scholarship from a place called the Air League Educational Trust, because the Air Force weren't giving women flying scholarships at the time because they didn't have women in to fly, but the Air League Educational Trust was encouraging women to fly. So they paid for probably half my licence.
Mm. What did you first learn on?
Cessna 152.
Uh-huh. And then you had Bulldogs at the University Air Squadron?
Bulldogs in the University Air Squadron, yes.
Yeah. So by the time you finished your music degree and you got, what sort of qualification did you have on the UAS? Did you achieve just a certain number of hours?
I only joined in my second year of university, so I was just approaching the PFB stage when I left university.
PFB being?
Preliminary flying badge. We have these little things called PFBs and PIFGs, yeah, which are sort of baby wings.
Mm. And you by then decided to join the RAF, had you?
Yes.
So what was the route you took in?
The application form I filled in through the UAS, through the boss on the UAS. And that got me a date at Biggin Hill. And it was all done through the Air Squadron. I went down to Biggin Hill, did the application tests, and then heard through the Air Squadron that I'd been accepted. Finished my degree in the June-July time and started IOT in the September.
And you then went to ab initio training again, did you?
Yes, I did initial officer training at Cranwell, and then I did my basic flying training on the Tucano, also at Cranwell.
Because of the jet prop officers?
They've just been phased out.
Yeah. Mm. And Tucano was nice to learn on, was it?
It was good. No, it was good fun. I did the whole lot, including fast jet lead-in, so it was about 140 hours in a year. But it was lovely.
And from there?
From there, I was actually streamed for Valley, and I was told I had a 2.5 year wait for the Hawk course. And I'd actually always wanted to be a multi-engine pilot, because when I applied to join the Air Force in 1990, they'd only been having women in for a year, and we could only fly multi-engines or helicopters. So I'd always wanted to be a truckee pilot. By the time I finished basic...
pilot?
Truckee.
Oh, a truckee pilot.
Truckee pilot.
Yeah.
By the time I finished basic, there were no slots for helicopters or multi-engines, and it was fast jet or nothing. So I was given 2.5 years to wait for my fast jet course. I started waiting for that, and after about 6 months, they announced that helicopters had opened up, and I could go helicopters if I wanted to. So I volunteered to go helicopters and went to Shawbury. Did about 60 hours on the Gazelle. 60 hours later, I still couldn't hover. So I don't know, rubbing your tummy and patting your head, it didn't click.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they said I couldn't go back into the fast jet hold because I'd volunteered to leave it. It was still very long. But I could go back into the multi-engine hold, which was what I'd wanted to do in the first place. So I waited another year, went to Cranwell and flew the jet stream at Cranwell, and then came onto the Herc 4.5 years ago.
The jet stream, that's that twin engine.
Yes.
But you know, when you were waiting all this time, how did you actually pass the time?
The first 6 months that I was waiting, I mean, between initial officer training and basic flying training, I spent a year with Bristol University Air Squadron just helping. It didn't involve much. I'm just sitting around drinking coffee. Between basic flying training and going to helicopters, I held with Central Flying School at Scampton, and so I got on trips with them and did a bit of flying. Then when I finished on helicopters and was waiting to go to multi-engine pilot training, I got myself a job as an ops officer at RAF Northolt. So I actually spent that year and the time between finishing my multi-engine course and starting the Hercules OCU as an ops officer at Northolt, so I actually had something productive to do.
So when did you start on the Hercules OCU?
Jan 1997.
And as a sort of trainee co-pilot, was
yes.
it? That's the situation. So what did that involve? Lots of circuits getting to know the aircraft, did you?
Ground school, obviously, and then we've got quite a few simulators. Circuit flying, instrument flying, a lot of instrument flying practice. Then ultimately you get onto the route phase. You do a route trainer to Europe, you do a route trainer out to the States, and then you come back and you have your final handling check, your instrument rating test, your route check, your ground cat. I started the OCU in January and I was out on a squadron, I think it was the end of June.
Mm-hmm. And then you spent how long as a co-pilot?
Just under 3 years.
Doing, your routine flying,
Absolutely, yes. I was on 24 Squadron, which is the sister squadron to 30 Squadron, mainly route flying. And then a year ago now, I was on the OCU to become a captain. Finished that in June, and I've been a captain on 30 Squadron since July last year.
What does it take to switch over from the right-hand seat to the left-hand seat?
Nothing surprisingly, the polling is exactly the same no matter which seat you're in. And by the time you've done 3 years as a co-pilot, you're ready to move across. You're ready to move across and take responsibility. It's a lot more fun.
That was really the point of my question. In other words, how easy is it to make the transition, not necessarily from the mirror image of flying or anything, the control layout, but...
I would say it's very easy because you're not recommended for captaincy until the squadron believe that you can do it. So by the time you move across, you're ready to do it, and you only really need a short course just to make sure you know everything you have to do.
I mean, you've gone through all the routines and flight checks and paperwork, I suppose, as a co-pilot over the years anyway.
You've seen it all.
You've seen it.
But you've always, as a co-pilot, you're always there, whatever you do, is this what you want me to do, Captain? You can never really go off and do what you think because you've always got to check, whereas when you move into the left-hand seat, you can just get on with it. You're there and...
Were you aware of the sort of responsibility that came with captaincy or was it?
Yes and no. Mm. I was aware of it because I had seen them do it and I began to think in the right-hand seat, enough now, I want to be in the left-hand seat. 90% of the time when you're flying, it is routine. Everything goes along according to the course and there aren't many hassles. It's just the occasional time when you're sitting there thinking, what am I going to do? And the rest of the crew, even though they'll have their best inputs, ultimately they'll turn around and look at you and say, what do you want to do? And there isn't anyone else to turn around and look at and say,
The buck stops there.
Yeah.
Yeah. What sort of trips, stick in your memory? I mean, I suppose most of them are pretty routine, but are there any unusual trips you've
Chile.
Done? Chile.
Chile.
Really? As far down as that?
I did it 6 months into my co-pilot's tour, and it's ruined the Air Force for me now because I will never have a trip as much as I enjoyed as Chile. It was February 3 years ago, so it'd be February 98, and it was FIDE, which is the International Air Show. The Air Force was sending down some F3s to display, followed by a Nimrod for SAR cover, a VC-10 to transport the boys down, the engineers, and two Hercs with spare kit for the F3s. We flew from Lynham to Larges to Bermuda to Panama and down to Chile. The air show was 10 days long. The air show coordinator said, thank you very much, Hercules pilots. We don't need you now for 10 days. And that was it. So we had 10 days in Santiago. Absolutely lovely crew. We did all the sightseeing. We drank wine. We ate tapas. We went to museums. We went up into the Andes. After 10 days, we came back to Panama. The VC-10 broke down, so we had 4 days off in Panama. And then Bermuda, Larges home.
Where's Larges?
Azores.
Azores,
isn't it? Yeah, off the northwest coast of Africa. Mm. Or somewhere like that. Across the Atlantic.
Yeah. Nothing to touch that sort of thing. Chile's an awful long way, though, isn't it? Did you overnight on the way out?
Or? Yes, night stopped in Larges, night stopped in Bermuda, night stopped in Panama.
Oh, right.
So it took us 4 days to get down. Mm. So normally it's one of those things where they send the crew down and back, and 10 days later another crew down and back. But they realised it would be cheaper to keep us in a small hotel somewhere than actually, fly the Hercules all the way down, all the way back again.
Mm. Mm. That sounds fantastic.
It was wonderful.
Otherwise, what are the main trips you've done? Have you been down to Mount Pleasant?
No, I haven't. I did a 4-week detachment to Africa a few years ago. Won't this be September 99, it must have been.
What part was that?
The Congo.
Oh, really?
It was when one of the Congo episodes flared up. And it was a 6-day call out. Could we go down to Ascension Island for a couple of days and come back? So we flew down to Ascension Island. We spent a day there. We then flew to Libreville in the Gabon. We then spent 3 weeks. The Marines had gone into the Congo to try and bring out the British people. And we were flying into Brazzaville, which was the safe side of the river. And we were doing shuttles between Libreville and Brazzaville, dropping the Marines off. They went off and did their thing on the other side of the river. We sat on the pan for anything between 2 and 8 hours, waited for them to come back, and then flew back to Libreville.
Did you have any protection while they were gone? You
know, well, we were in the safe part of the country, because you know the Congo is divided into two, and on the side of the river we were in the effectively safe area.
And you were the only aircraft involved on that?
No, there was 4 aircraft, made from a mixture of all the squadrons.
Yeah. What about Yugoslavia? Have you done any trips there?
Regularly.
Yeah,
last summer I think it was, when it all flared up, Kosovo. Spent the best part of July, August, September, probably twice a week, flying out to Joya, Bari, Brindisi, and then across to Skopje and back. I said that was our bread and butter for about 6 months. Been to Split quite a few times, Banja Luka, Zagreb.
And you don't leave the airfield, I suppose, when you're there. You just go in and drop the stuff and come out again.
Yeah, we tend to always night stop Italy. So if we run out of crew duty or there is a delay, we come back across the sea, across the Adriatic, and stay down that coast of Italy.
Have you actually, on these trips, seen the effects of the war out there? Do you get any feedback?
Not really.
Have you brought people out, for instance, or civilians out?
No, I haven't. I've always been taking troops in and bringing troops out, normally troop rotations. Mm. When I was in Africa, the part of Africa, the Brazzaville part that we were in, had been involved in a civil war about 1.5 years before. And so all the air traffic towers and all the buildings were bombed out on the airfield. But that was from the previous civil war, not the recent one. Mm.
Yeah. And I suppose Cyprus is your most regular trip, isn't it?
It used to be much more regular than it was. Mm. I said, whenever Saddam plays up, Cyprus gets busy, but recently I haven't been doing much flying out of Cyprus. Actually, it's a real shame because we like Cyprus. This time of the year, it's all Norway. January, February, March, we spend probably most of our time flying out to Norway.
There are a lot of exercises in the snow and cold, I suppose.
The Marines and the Army exercise out there, all the way up the coast: Fagernes, Everness, Bardufoss, Bodø, Trondheim, Tromsø, Banak. I've got a trip there tomorrow. I was out there on Monday. We probably do at least a dozen day trips out there.
Because they're all NATO airfields out there, aren't they?
Yes, and we're very friendly with the Norwegians, although my trip to Banak on Monday was to bring back the army, because the Norwegians were upset that they might be traipsing foot and mouth around their countryside, so they kicked them out. So we got called out to go and bring the army back.
Now, I remember I used to work in Norway a lot, and I used to be surprised that some of these remote villages had 3-mile runways.
Yes.
Obviously, could take
best way to get around, though.
Yeah. And you've been to America, presumably, have you?
Yes.
That must be a killer of a trip, isn't it?
It's the one we all fight for, actually.
You fight for it?
Mm.
Where do you go to? Washington?
Well, we normally fly across and night stop Gander or Goose Bay or St. John's the first night. But then it always tends to go westwards. So the Tornadoes do their red flag exercise at Nellis Air Force Base, which is 5 miles outside Las Vegas. Sometimes they exercise in Cherry Point or Patrick, which is down in Florida. Sometimes we go across to the ranges out in California and night stop San Diego or China Lake. Sometimes we can end up night stopping St. Louis.
You're mainly carrying ground crews for Tornadoes then, are you?
Mainly for the fast jets. The fast jets that are out there in exercise, and we're mainly supporting them. But there's probably 2 states trips a month that come up. But if you think there's 30 captains, they don't come up that often unless you can get them on a call out.
Yeah.
And we go and do all our shopping.
How many female air crew are on the base here, pilots and so on?
There's 4 female captains. I think there's about another 5 female co's. there's about the same amount of female navs. I don't know. I don't know altogether. There's quite a few loadies.
You're no longer novelties anyway.
No, but we weren't really as pilots ever novelties, because female loadies have been on the aircraft since the 60s. Mm. So yes, we moved up to the front seats, but the guys had always been used to having girls around. It's not like the fast jet world where it was sort of frowned upon. The multi-engine world just adjusted straight away, really.
Yeah. So there are female pilots on Hawks now.
Yeah, there's female pilots on everything, I think, now.
Really?
Yeah.
Even Tornadoes?
We've had pilots on Tornadoes for several years. I think we've just got our first female pilot gone on to the OCU for the Harrier.
Oh, really? Mm. Now, what about your music? Are you keeping it up?
Yeah, I play the piano. I have a piano at home.
Yeah.
I read music at university and studied down at the Academy of Music. Mm. And I said piano was my thing. But I play it as much as I can now, and whenever we go down Moot, if we do a night stop, the boys will always look out for a piano bar.
Oh, good.
So we can have a sing-song.
That's great, yeah. Where's your home?
Malmesbury.
Oh, not far away.
It's about 20 minutes away. That's where I live now.
Yeah. Mm. Great. What else is there to cover? Any other routine? Yes, really, if I can sort of ask you a sort of half-technical question about the old Herc, which is 30 years old now. What's it like to fly?
It's wonderful. No, it's wonderful.
It's not temperamental at all.
It's not temperamental. Kit in the Herc is temperamental. The nav kit might be temperamental. The autopilot might be temperamental. But the Herc itself is solid. It carries a lot of minor problems, but it can always get you where you want to go. It's great to fly. It's a real hands-on aircraft.
Very responsive, is it?
It's not so much that it's responsive, but you've got to grab it to fly it. It's not like a fly-by-wire where everything's all automatic. You're actually manually flying it, really.
It's got power controls, isn't it?
It's got hydraulic-assisted controls.
Yeah. Oh, only assisted, not fully. You've got wires
running all the way down.
With actuators to the control
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So there's a certain amount of mechanical haulage.
Yes.
Haulage work, yeah.
But no, I think it's great to fly. You know what the aircraft's capable of. There isn't really any surprises there. It's been flown for so long.
Yeah.
You feel safe with it.
Mm. What about the J? Are you looking forward to that?
Yeah, I'll be interested in flying the J.
Yeah.
I'll let everyone sort out its hiccups first. Mm. I'll stay on the K while they sort it out.
It's surprising when you think what a veteran the K is. Of 30 years and different versions all around the world, and yet I suppose the internal modifications of the J are so different.
Well, it's the engines, the main thing. I mean, engines are new, and everything else has changed.
Yeah.
And all the computer stuff. Mm. They've had so many snags integrating it all.
Yeah. How do you see your future? I mean, you're making a career at the RAF, are you?
I've got another 6 years left on my option point.
Yeah.
If all goes well, I'll stay in. Mm. If I don't move or if I get tired of it, then I shall come out and join the airlines. Mm. I'm leaving my options open. I haven't done my licences as yet, but I'm leaving my options open.
Mm. What about marriage and things like that? I mean,
being married didn't take.
Oh, dear. Yeah.
I've been with my present partner for 3 years.
Yeah.
He was a Hercules captain. He's now up at Cranwell as an instructor on the School of Initial Officer Training.
Mm.
Mm. He's got about another 9 months left on that tour, and then hopefully he'll come back down here. Marriage I don't have a problem with, but I can't actually see children.
No.
I can't do the job and have children. At the moment, I'm not broody. If it happens, it happens, but it's not something at the moment I can see on the game plan.
Of course, you're no different to the sort of civilian career women now.
Mm.
I've got a daughter-in-law with two small children, and she's doing a part-time job again. She's got the need for it. She's trying to straddle both camps. She's got a very understanding husband, I think. But that's the only way you can do it.
Yes.
Yeah.
But you can't be a pilot with children. You can't be called away at 1 minute's notice to go away for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
It's impossible.
Yeah. And it's a very good move you made, was it?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah. I love the job. We all say it's better than working for a living. As long as you don't mind the insecurity of never knowing when you're going to be around, when you're not going to be around, it's the families who have to put up with it. It's not that we're away an awful lot, but you're away at very short notice. Everything constantly changes. There's no stability. You never know when you're going to be home.
Inga, thank you very much for talking to me. It was a a very interesting interview. Thanks a lot.
Okay.